Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 233. My name's Turner Sparks.
And I am Mike Kaplan.
You can find me at turnersparks.com. Buy my album, Turner Sparks Live from the Friars Club. I will be on the radio. I just got asked on this Friday morning on SiriusXM Radio. Listen to Larry the Cable Guy's morning show. I'm going to be on there shooting the breeze with Larry. And you can check out Kaplan at Cap'n America across all social media platforms. Kaplan, we got to get you on the radio.
I want to be on Howard Stern. Yeah, they said Sirius. Get me on Stern, someone. Book me.
I'm on the big one. You can get Stern. I'm getting Larry. I'm on the big show.
I love Larry. Can book me too. I'm in.
On the show today, we're talking about South Africa, Kaplan. We have South Africa's this comedian I've been hearing about for at least a decade from my buddy Ruben Paul. David Cow is coming on in just a minute to explain. He has this great show called Blacks Only that he's toured around the country. Just check him out online. He has millions of things out there, and he's hilarious. And he's also, we haven't learned much about South Africa since Nelson Mandela. So we're going to get into that in a minute. He's going to fill us in on the last 25 years in about 45 minutes. So that's going to be fun. But before that, Kaplan, Patreon, if people want to support this show, people are into this show, the best way to do it is go to patreon.com/lostinamerica. And for $5 a month, Kaplan and I give you 3 extra shows a week. Kaplan, we only did one last week because it was Memorial
Day.
It was because of the vets.
It was because we have out of respect for Memorial Day.
We were honoring, our country. Please, if you don't like that, take it up with soldiers. Don't take it up with us.
Exactly.
But normally we do 3 extra shows a week. What is that? 12 shows a month that you
get? A lot of shows, a lot of content. They're all at least a half hour long. Sometimes we go long. We like to talk. So you're getting many hours of content a month.
And you're all back to work now. So on your commute, listen to us. There's no excuse anymore.
Yeah. And speaking of work, if you don't want to work, we don't just talk about our lives. You told me you were going through the old notes. And one of the very first episodes, we gave out some stock tips, right?
And Kaplan, you gave out stock tips. When COVID hit,
March 2020, the early days, I told everyone to buy GameStop stock, which was at $3.50 a share at the time. And I told everyone to buy weed stocks.
And we
marijuana, grow generate. We crunched the numbers. We said if you put $10,000 into GameStop when I told you to, when I gave you the buy order, you would have $650,000 right now.
And look at that, you idiots.
You idiots.
For $5 a month, you could have now $650,000. But that's what you get for not signing. All these other people who signed up back then, they're all retired, they told me.
And you are idiots, because if you would have put more money into our Patreon page, we could have taken the money and bought GameStop stock, and then we could have retired.
We would have redistributed the wealth.
Yeah, and also, the weed stocks as well, marijuana, you've done a lot of money. You would have made 10 times your money in that. Yeah. So
if you would have put $1 million, you would have made $10 million.
If you would have put $1 million. And if you have $1 million, you should be a Patreon subscriber.
Don't Patreon.com/lostinamerica. Shout out to all of our subscribers, the big ones, the D.O., as he likes to be called. He doesn't want us mentioning his name anymore, our $20 subscriber. He's disassociated himself with us, even though he gives us a lot of money. Drew Fralick, I'm going to be out there in Detroit. Go to my website, turnersparks.com. I'll be in Detroit doing, this will be the first time doing my new hour. I will be there on July 9th doing a show with Drew Fralick in Detroit, Michigan. So if you're out there, God help you. But if you are out there, come to the show.
I don't know why you're out there.
Now, should we move on to today's episode, Kaplan?
All right, let's talk South Africa.
Well, the reason why this story came up is because we were looking through the papers and we saw that the former president of South Africa, not Nelson Mandela, they had a different
former president. He was a president for about almost 10 years, I think, too.
They've had people since him. Yeah. And this guy's Jacob Zuma was a president from 2008 to 2019. And then what I read is that he is going on trial. He just pleaded not guilty to corruption charges.
Graft, which is our favorite word on this pod, right?
Graft. Yeah. All
I learned
types
that
of,
from this
I mean,
pod.
It was money laundering, racketeering. Racketeering is one they usually just save for Tony Soprano. So
yeah.
Bribery, fraud. It's all kinds of stuff. But then the more we looked into it, the more we both realized that in America, they taught us about apartheid, and then they taught us that apartheid ended, and then they taught us Nelson Mandela became president, and then in somewhere there was like a, I don't know, a rugby game or something that Matt Damon was in.
Yeah, there was that. I mean,
and then that was the end of it. They just said, hey, everything's good now.
Well, that's you. I mean, I'm a blowhard, right? So I had a South African friend when I was growing up, and this is what you learn. He would always give me biltong to eat. So that was my number one blowhard move, was to talk beef jerky. It's basically South African jerky. So I would say that to everyone, and that worked because I actually had a South African girlfriend in college. So then I had to keep up on things a little bit more because I had a girlfriend.
You don't want to sound like an idiot.
I didn't have to sound like an idiot. So I had to pretend I knew about the Boers, the whole war. I had to learn about, but you know what happened? Is that we broke up, and then I stopped paying attention.
So you stopped.
She's telling me all the time, you got to come to South Africa. It's so beautiful. We have this amazing safari. Everything's amazing. It's amazing food. Everything was better there. And so I said, okay. But then we broke up, so I never went. So I don't know. So I know a few years past you, and then I'm done too. So
what I want to find, it seems like, we didn't learn much past apartheid ending. All we learned that everything was just good, but then we read this article and it says maybe it's been a little rocky. What I'm interested in is how you come out of something like apartheid and successfully, which seems very difficult to do. David Cow, can we get to
David Cow?
Fantastic comedian. Everybody look him up. Welcome to the show. And I don't even know what question we necessarily start with here, except for how you doing, man.
Maybe how to spell my surname. It's K-A-U, right? Because a lot of people think or pronounce it Cow. Well, white people pronounce it Cow.
Am I saying it incorrectly?
Typical white person.
Oh, no, you said it. No. For a white guy, you said it correctly.
Oh, no.
But
we're off to a rough start.
So if you were from here or non-white, you would say Cow, David Cow, which is K-A-U. Yeah.
Okay.
But obviously, you know, everybody pronounces it Cow. That's the money. That's where the money is. It's in the cow. The money's in the cow. So
Cow. So
yeah, which then obviously, if you were to Google me, then you have to go David K-A-U, right?
Okay.
And then if you look at my Twitter handle, it's David Cow1. Because David Cow was taken by a Japanese illustrator whose name is David Cow.
A Japanese? So that's a Japanese last name as well?
How do the Japanese pronounce it?
Apartheid and slavery things go way back. And they were like a franchise all over the world. So
were the Japanese in South Africa?
No, but that's okay.
No, we didn't. Yeah.
South Africa travels and apartheid. It's almost like everyone had shares in apartheid, you know?
Yes.
You go to the British, they did some shit. You come here, the Afrikaners, they had a hand in it. You know, you got American companies that never left when others left. And some just stayed and creamed the money, you know. And some left because they were protesting apartheid. So Coca-Cola and Pepsi, for instance, Pepsi left South Africa, Coca-Cola stayed, right?
Interesting.
And a couple of other interesting facts and companies. So, and then some of the former Liberation Party members, your Jacob Zumas, were trained in Angola. Thabo Mbeki was trained and studied in Russia and the UK. So everyone sort of played a role. You know, South Africa is very close to Cuba, and a couple of other African countries where you need a passage when you escape in South Africa. So you'll have to either go into Botswana, Swaziland, Lesotho, Zimbabwe to kind of eventually get to your Angola, or then take a plane to like Russia or wherever else other people got their military training, right?
So you're saying that while the world in the 70s, 80s was blaming, say, oh, South Africa has this big problem, we have nothing to do with it, actually, everyone was involved. Is that what you're saying?
So some people were helping the currently now the ANC government, your Nelson Mandelas, your Jacob Zumas, your current liberation parties. Some of the parties, if they caught you, they would hand you over to the then apartheid government. So some of the other countries were kind of working against us.
Wait, so if they caught you in
either crossing through their countries or borders, there were particular countries where you could come because you were trying to fight apartheid in South Africa, or you could run away too. When you were almost caught or getting caught or, you know, about to be snitched on in South Africa. So it's an interesting history, which can't all be told in, let's say, just Nelson Mandela movie or in one or two documentaries, you know. You guys saw the rugby movie which was about South Africa winning the World Cup. That was 1995 World Cup, right? So that paints like another moment in history. And Nelson Mandela had just become the president in 1994. Then the World Cup, we first won in 1995. And then, you know, you guys started talking about Jacob Zuma. So Mandela went one term. Thabo Mbeki went almost two terms. I don't know if you guys picked this up in your research. So Thabo Mbeki fired Jacob Zuma, who was his deputy president. And then 9 years later, Jacob Zuma became the president of the party and fired Thabo Mbeki as the president of the country.
Wow.
He fired him for corruption, right? Or because of his somebody involved?
Thabo Mbeki then fired Jacob Zuma for these corruption charges.
In 1999, right? Maybe, somewhere
I'll tell you when. Maybe 1999, I think, yeah.
That's
either 1999 or...
Early 2000s? Or...
No, 2000 and something.
Yeah.
Okay. Early 2000, yeah. So then, you know, Jacob Zuma went out of government, blah, 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 but he was still the deputy president of the party, and Thabo Mbeki was the president.
And we should say that the ANC is the party that kind of took over. It was Nelson Mandela's party. It took over when apartheid ended.
And the ANC has been
the only party in town
since 1994. Yeah.
So for 25 years, or 20, whatever.
27.
27 years, yeah. They've been the one ruling party.
Yeah.
So if you're the head of that party, are you as powerful as the president of the country or even more?
You automatically become the president of the country.
Wow.
So it's an... It's like a parliament.
So every 10 years or 8 years, they have their elections. So now the fuck up with it, right? The mess up with it is that the party elections are always a year or two before the country national elections. So Nelson Mandela so far is the only president that's ever finished his term. He wanted to go one term. He finished it. Thabo Mbeki came in. A year before he could finish his two terms, Jacob Zuma became the president of the party, fired Thabo Mbeki as the president of the country, right? Then there was an acting president, Kgalema Motlanthe, for about 6 months or so. Then Jacob Zuma became the president of the country after the country elections, right? Then in 2009, Cyril Ramaphosa became the president of the ANC.
Of the party.
Just before Jacob Zuma could finish his second term, Cyril Ramaphosa then fired Jacobs.
Wow. But
they tell you to resign, right? They tell you to resign.
And right? You have no choice.
And you kind of have to resign. So unfortunately, Nelson Mandela so far has been the only president that's finished his term.
So we got to fix that. We got to line up. And it's not
I think
by...
It's a, I think it's a shit salad. And I think I'll explain it to you why I think then the research you guys went and did and you found that Jacob Zuma is on trial.
Yes.
So Jacob Zuma went on this trial. There was a rape charge as well at some point, which he won.
Before he was president, right? I believe.
Before he was the president,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Then about maybe 2 weeks before the general elections, he still had all these charges that you are seeing today. But the National Prosecution Authority, which is like our FBI, if you want to really just summarize it, they dropped the charges because they found that there was, they said there wasn't enough evidence, but there were also recordings they found where people were kind of working behind the scenes just to get rid of Jacob Zuma or to prevent him from becoming the president, right? Which those clips are going to come back now in this trial again. So now all charges were dropped. That was 2 weeks before he became the president, right? Fast forward, he gets fired or removed as the president. Then the opposition party goes back to court. And then the judge overturns the decision to drop those charges. And now these same charges are coming back again when he's no longer the president. You know, they are fighting him. They're saying he can't use state resources. He's no longer the president. Now he's liable for like $500,000 of legal fees out of the blue. This is now these charges that you guys are reading about. So these are the same charges.
They're old charges. They're old bribery. Yeah.
These are the same charges that went away and now they're back, right?
And it's just because he doesn't have power anymore that they're back?
Well, now, you know, he's not in control anymore because there's, you know, there's other people now that are in control of the country or whatever resources or institutions, essentially. So... it's interesting that that's the story that you guys sort of saw that it's in the media.
Yes.
And got your attention. So equally at home, there'll be a faction of the ANC that believes, you know, these are charges that are being brought up again just because he's no longer the president. There's people that believe just leave him alone. There's people that think to make an example about corruption in South Africa, he must go trial, he must go to jail. But he's got quite a very interesting and very interesting mix of a legal team. Definitely one of the top guys in South Africa are representing him. But if you go back further, you'll also see every time he's on trial, he'll fire the lawyers and then the new ones have to catch up. And then you kind of have to...
Why did we that too? Or else, did they fire him recently? Did his lawyers quit most recently?
You know, whether he fires them, they fire him. The destination is the same.
Yeah. And so this is all within the ANC, which is the, I forget what it stands for. The name.
So now he's an ordinary member of the ANC, but he's in the top structure. Let's say the top 90, which is called the NEC, the National Executive Committee of the ANC. So those are the guys that 50-50, they can fire you as the president or they'll take your vote or decide if you must go and be charged with such and such. So that's the 90 people, right? So he's still in that structure. But then every time there's a new president, your former, you know, sort of your loyalist will start shifting naturally to the new, wherever the power lies.
Sure.
So the new president, then everybody will start, you know, moving that way. That's then how you can end up being charged either in the party or even outside the party structures, but in the country with the country's institutions. So now that's where Jacob Zuma is, right? And then there'll be another, let's say an opposition or someone can still take to court and say, well, the country shouldn't pay for these legal fees because you are no longer the president or you are not the president at the time. Then he's lost that case. So now he's sitting with about 6 million rand of legal fees. That's about maybe $450,000 legal fees. That's just one case. I mean, right.
Yeah.
The president, Jacob Zuma, has been in and out of court so many times.
I do see he's worth $20 million, they estimate online, so he can probably afford it.
No, the online stuff is not, you can't verify.
I was wondering where that money comes from.
You have to prove where the income came from.
Yeah.
But generally, there's people that are still donating money to him, helping him pay off his house, taking food and groceries wherever he is. There was an interesting documentary called The Hunt for Gaddafi's Money, which then disappeared about 2 weeks online. But, you know, from that documentary, it's alleged that Muammar Gaddafi left some money in South Africa when President Jacob Zuma was still the president. And there's kind of like this thing, you know, it's almost like a Survivor.
We can find it.
What was the other thing? Not Survivor, the same producer, Mark Bennett.
Like a treasure hunt type show?
It's almost like a treasure hunt.
It's Amazing Race or something? Like,
yeah.
Every now and then, there's people that...
Gaddafi's million. Find Gaddafi's Millions?
Find Gaddafi's Millions would be a great show.
Yeah.
So there's always all this, you know, stories of people that are trying to find Gaddafi's money and gold, lots of cash that's supposedly in South Africa, including Libya itself.
I'm sure Gaddafi left funny clues. I could just see him making a real game of it.
We could definitely do like a nice little show, make it hilarious. You know?
That would be a great show. Find Gaddafi's Millions.
So then his son currently, so for Jacob Zuma to eventually, be fired, he was then accused of allowing a group of an Indian family, the Gupta family, to kind of control government and basically take what they want, right? This is all, obviously, we're all watching it in the media, yeah. Right? They've never been charged. They've never been arrested. They left. They now live in Dubai. His son was charged with something, paraded, handcuffed in chains, never charged, never found guilty. They tried to charge him with a car accident he had where someone died in a taxi. He was found not guilty. So you have all these elements. So the son is quite well off. He's based in Dubai and South Africa. So on the one hand, the son is doing really well. And then on the other hand, you'll have people that are trying to help Jacob Zuma pay for his legal fees, right? I don't know what's the relationship there.
Well, it's these people who think he's innocent. And
there's tons of people that believe it's politically motivated.
Yes.
There's enough people that think that. So then now we're going to have to just wait and see what happens with the courts. The case will obviously take forever. I think he's probably now 79 or if not older.
79.
So now he could be 79 or 77, yeah. So now we're gonna go back and forth. So unfortunately, all this means the country is not getting the attention it needs from government.
Yeah.
The money that the government must spend on the basics, water, infrastructure, roads, schools, education, health. Everybody's busy trying to defend themselves, trying to fight the other guys in the party. So the ANC is sort of at war with itself. Again, you know, it's happened before. And unfortunately, most of the ANC guys end up in government as part of their being in a certain structure and power in the ANC. So even if you're working as a mayor or you're working as the governor, what we call the premier, you are still a member of the ANC, and now someone is trying to get your ass out and be the ones that are in, right? So you can barely focus on your job as the mayor or the governor. As soon as you get elected, someone else starts wanting to take your position in the ANC, which will give them the resources and power in government and your position in government. So it's just been a bit of a fucking yo-yo. And we are all tired of it now. We've all been voting sentimentally. It's the ANC, it was the Liberation Party. But people are getting tired of this shit now.
Do they control most of the local governments too? You say like mayors and governors, like is it ANC?
Most of them belong to the ANC, yeah. Or whichever then party might win like a small election in that region or area. So the Western Cape largely has been governed by the opposition party for the past couple of years now. So nationally, the ANC is still the government, they're in power. Then provincially, which you guys call states, the ANC has 8 states and the Western Cape belongs, was run by the DA, which is the opposition party, which then a lot of people see it as a white party. Life is good and better. Most white people prefer to live in South Africa, all the rich people and tourists and investors rather be in Cape Town.
Cape Town.
So it's
Western Cape.
Yeah. And it's so the Africa.
That's where Cape Town is. That's where Cape Town is.
Yeah.
In the Western Cape. So you have the African National Congress. I was trying to look up what the ANC stands for. I remembered African
National Congress.
And that's the main party. That's the party that won the...
That was Mandela's party, yeah.
They took it over.
Since 1994.
So, and is that the...
That party's basically gotten 25 years, 26, 27 years of grace. Meaning people say, well, you liberated us.
We've been here so long. Yeah.
Yeah, you liberated us, so we're going to vote for you. But the other parties... you touched on it briefly, but we have the New National Party, which seems to be...
Which is now currently the Democratic Alliance, which is now running the Western Cape, which includes Cape Town.
And was that the party that ran the country during apartheid?
So National Party was the apartheid government.
Yeah.
Then they kind of went to the dry cleaners and had a shower or a swim and then called themselves the New National Party.
Oh, that's not like much of a name change. Just calling it new.
Fucked it up and then called themselves the Democratic Alliance. But really, this is all the same shit.
Right. Just, it's the right-wing party, I guess. It's
just the same shit repackaged better.
And it's...
But the leader of the party is not white, right?
The leaders have changed through time. They had a black guy. His name is Musi Maimane, fantastic guy. But then a lot of black people thought he's just been used, he's a puppet or whatever. And then one of the previous leaders currently in the DA, who used to be the leader of the New National Party and eventually the DA, came out a few months ago and said the black guy was an experiment. And
So it didn't work. They were seeing if they could get to power using him and it backfired.
They basically admitted they were just using the black.
It sounded like a joke, but it was quite ugly in social media and stuff.
So he's out. He's not.
So a lot of black people rather not vote at all because they are angry with the ANC than vote for the Democratic Alliance. That's where we are, right? Then the other party that's made a big impact is the EFF, Economic Freedom Fighters.
Is that like the...
Which is led by Julius Malema.
Okay. And what's their angle?
So Julius Malema used to be the president of the ANC Youth League.
Youth League? Minors.
So he came up through the African National Congress system.
He came up through the system and they traded him away.
Since he was probably 14, 16 years old, one of his idols, Peter Mokaba, used to be a leader of the Youth League at some point. Now, when the ANC suspended Julius Malema for various things, similar to what they're doing now with Jacob Zuma, right? He left the ANC and started his own political party, EFF. But then he literally took all the youth support in terms of their structure. So when the ANC used to get 60%, 61%, 67%, 62% of the election vote, they now got 52% since the EFF, but the EFF ended up with 10% of the national vote, right? So you could say all the young guys kind of said, you know what, we out, we're going to leave and we're going to go with the new guy. But it's not. In most cases, he becomes a kingmaker because if the ANC and the DA are at loggerheads after an election, especially the metros, what we call the metros, the big cities, Pretoria, Cape Town, Johannesburg, you'd find the DA maybe has 40%, 41%, the ANC has 40-something. Then Julius can decide if the ANC stays in power or the DA comes in, which he's done with a few cities and a few municipalities. By merging. He's in that position. He's in that position, Kyrie.
But he's never, has he ever turned on the ANC yet? Or he always ends up supporting them?
He knows all their secrets. He's right. Got people that tell him everything they do. He dishes out their debt all the time. You know, he calls their fool. You know, he really just exposes them most times and calls it what it is, tells it the way it is when they don't. But it's almost like he knows more about them, and we find out a lot more about the ANC before the ANC tells us from him.
That's great. Is there a generational difference?
That's exact. I was the exact word coming out.
On who people vote for, because if you grew up under apartheid, you would say you might be like an ANC loyalist no matter
what.
Because
exactly.
But if you're like 18 years old right now, you might have a different, or 20 or 25, maybe a different mindset. I don't know.
You don't have the same respect for the old guard and the. And
so within the ANC, right? So you can imagine Jacob Zuma is 79. He became the president. He was 67, 69. And then you had Thabo Mbeki before that. And then Nelson Mandela, when he decided to do one term, I mean, he was already quite old when he became the president, right? So you've got that, and you've got this new generation that are in their 40s, maybe approaching 50, that... By now, we all believe they should now be running things, right? But you almost have a queue with the ANC and the old guys that believe they are entitled to be the next president, the next deputy president, the next minister or governor of a state, the next mayor. So essentially, we are at a point where, honestly, there's, you know, if there's a young guy that's sort of coming up, sometimes they'll go out of their way to kind of deal with you if you just don't listen and do as you're told and wait for your turn, right? So some of the young guys have fallen away, which is then the ANC does struggle to get new young vote, educated, born post-Mandela. And those guys are sort of either not voting at all. Some will look at Julius Malema. Some will look at the DA. But out of sentiments, the majority of the country is still caught up in, you freed us, you promised me a house, you promised me water, you know, I get a grant of like $20 a month or whatever, $30 a month. Because easily when they campaign, they can say, well, if you vote for the DA, they're probably going to do away with the grant. You know, they don't believe in the grant system. So that's also largely a lot of unemployed, uneducated people to some extent. So the middle class is quite small in South Africa, which are then the guys. There was a time there was a phrase called clever blacks, which when people that studied, that went to university, that are working, they're called black diamonds, your middle class black guys. As soon as they voiced anything against the ANC, they were termed clever blacks, and pretty much the ANC would tell them, go screw yourself, you know?
That's because a bad term.
The majority of the people will still kind of, out of ignorance, still vote or continue voting for the ANC. But the numbers are changing. Every election, they are losing votes. And there's more and more people that are kind of educated, that are doing better. Although COVID has now also come and shed on everything.
I mean, before COVID, we were reading that South Africa was ranked somewhere as like the most unequal country in the world, because you were saying there's very little middle class. Is a fair description of what you're talking about?
So what happened when Thabo Mbeki was in power, South Africa became one of the best countries ever, just economically, in terms of investors flocking in, black people doing well. And then when Jacob Zuma went in, he was blatant about black business must succeed, must do better, they must get more business, which is then where the Indian family kind of also came in and, you know, almost abused his power type thing. So a lot of people will feel like, actually, there was more progress in terms of more black businesses were doing okay or better or got jobs, or he made sure that, you know, transformation is like a thing. It's not just lip service. And so there's people that will say he was decisive, he made those decisions. And there's people currently that will now say, now we're kind of going backwards. A lot of black businesses are failing, are going out of business. And even before COVID, people would say stuff like that, or at least some of the black entrepreneurs would feel like that or felt like that. And I'm probably feeling worse now. So now we're almost becoming Nigeria. So if you guys follow or just look into Nigeria a little bit, Nigerians have never expected anything from their government, nothing, right? So that's why there's a lot of self-made millionaires, billionaires, artists, comedians, okay, musicians. Everybody just believes they are on their own and they have to somehow make it, right? A lot of South Africans now are now going to, you know what? There's anything this government is going to help me or do for me. Let me find what is it that I can do or that I'm good at, mind my own business, and just continue living my life. That's where we are kind of headed, right? There's still obviously millions and millions of people that believe the ANC is still going to build them houses and bring them water, clean water, and bring them electricity. Because those are then the stuff you find in manifestos. You know, free education has never really happened in South Africa. And you look at then all the corruption and all the money that's lost that you would read about. There should not be a similar squatter camp or a shack or informal settlement in South Africa. Everybody should be having free education. You know, we should be fairly secure and tourists all over the place, just purely from, if you look at the amount of money that's been stolen, mostly in government or by government officials, which some of it is public knowledge. Some are accused, they never go on trial. Some will get accused and then they just quit their job. And then the thing goes away. And then they'll show up in another government department.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's like a fucking game show.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, I have more questions about your career, about what happened directly after the fall of apartheid and when you started comedy and all that stuff. But before that, Kaplan, we have to talk about our podcast network, the world. David, we're part of the world's smartest podcast network.
That's why he knew that. That's why he's on this show today.
That's why he joined the show. You want to be around the world's smartest people.
These
the
brains.
Other shows, listen to The Political Orphanage with Andrew Heaton. Also, Ask a Political Scientist with Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy. All these people are comedians and also talk about interesting stuff. Go to worldsmartestpodcastnetwork.com. And now a word from your local sponsor. All right, we're back.
Thank you, sponsors.
Thank you, sponsor.
Paying the bills.
That's some nice sponsors you guys have there.
This guy is a professional pauser.
Well, that was, we start, so we have this company that drops in advertisements onto our show. And I didn't realize, I was getting all these New York City advertisements. And I'm like, oh, they must just, everyone in the world cares about New York City local ads. And then I went to Vermont on vacation and I was getting Vermont advertisements. We're like, oh, these people are doing it based off of where you are. We had no idea. It took us like 30 episodes, Stephen.
Okay, maybe you'll get an ANC advert or a Patrick Alliance advert.
That would be great.
I'm looking for a Biltong ad.
We're angling for EFF. They sound like that's our kind of listener.
The youth listen to us. Yeah, the rebels. They're our very alt middle. They're us, yes.
So a couple of policies, because this concept of coming out, like I said at the very beginning, out of apartheid and then boom, everything's happy, obviously doesn't happen, right? I mean, that wouldn't happen anywhere. You can't just snap your finger and everything's great. So I looked up a couple of the policies. I just wanted to find out. There was a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, I think, in like 1995. From what I could tell, the point it was to kind of get everyone to admit what they had done wrong and then somehow move forward.
Yeah, it was like a monopoly. It was like a monopoly get out of jail card.
That's what I thought. Okay, so all they literally had to do was admit that what I did was wrong.
I won't do it again. Never do it again.
And say sorry to the families. Yeah. Oh. Some of them had to point out the dead bodies, though. Mm. And because some families had dead, you know, have their family members who died and they had no clue where they went, where they disappeared to. They don't even know if they're still in this country.
Yeah.
So there was also a bit of, okay, fine, we took your son and we buried him here and we hanged him and shot him and da 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 da. So some of them, I think one or two people might have went to jail.
Yeah.
But equally, some of the folks from the previous government, apartheid government, were also like, fuck that, I'm not coming.
Yeah, you could. Well, that's what I read, is some people admitted what they did wrong and other people just never showed up to their tribunal. I mean, and then it was fine. They just moved on. Yeah.
I can't say he stayed home and watched Netflix. There wasn't Netflix then, but there used to be a franchise called Mr. Video in South Africa. Yeah.
It's like when I try to ground my children and they just don't listen. Like, I just forget it.
I think they were like, fuck it, I'm not coming. They rented some Rambo 2, First Blood,
Rambo Marathon, and just
American Ninja 4 and stayed home.
And then everyone said, well, we'll have to try something else. I mean, well, that didn't work. And then everyone just moved on. I mean, from what I read, it didn't seem like this was very effective of a commission, but that's what I wanted to ask you.
It was kind of effective, but it was also a bit unfair to some people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
What kinds
of people? A lot of people thought it was very unfair to Winnie Mandela. Who was married to Nelson Mandela when Nelson Mandela was in prison, and then they separated when Nelson Mandela came out. So a lot of people thought that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was very unfair how they treated her. One of the previous presidents, F.W. de Klerk, I think was one of the people who were like, fuck that, I'm not coming.
Yeah, so hope if the president doesn't come, then what is everyone else?
Well, he might have had some issues. Right?
I mean, of course,
yeah, he didn't. Which is then why now there's a debate with some people that will say, you are going after Jacob Zuma, but you allowed the apartheid guy to just go free and do whatever he wants, you know?
Did he leave the country?
You keep dragging Jacob. No, he's still around.
He stayed around.
Yeah, I think he might have passed recently. Just please Google F.W. de Klerk. Yeah. He might have passed recently.
I mean, I know
F-W,
that like
F.W. de Klerk. F.W. de Klerk. Space K-L-E-R-K.
Oh, yeah. He was, I think he's still alive.
I think he's still alive.
85 years old, okay. Still ticking.
Okay. It's possible. Yep. Well, it's possible.
Whoa. He won a Nobel Peace Prize?
For agreeing.
Nelson Mandela shared his Nobel Peace Prize with him, I think. Yeah. I stand to be corrected, but I think Nelson Mandela shared his Nobel Peace Prize with him.
Yeah.
I think so. Because remember, Nelson Mandela also made him. So Nelson Mandela became the president in 1994. Thabo Mbeki became the first deputy president. And then F.W. de Klerk stayed and became the second deputy president.
Oh, so he was still part of the government in the beginning.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. But that was Nelson Mandela extending a hand, you know, like, let's all get along.
Right.
And then at some point, I mean, de Klerk, again, he was like, fuck this shit, I'm out.
Yeah. And what about the other act I read about was the GEAR Act, which was Growth, Employment, and Redistribution in 1996. I guess the idea being
We are now on what's called NDP, National Development Program, I think. Just please Google NDP South Africa. But I think, so now we went through GEAR, we went through ASGEISA, we've come up with a few of these things, we just don't finish them.
Okay, so these are ideas to redistribute wealth, to bring...
Like the check you were saying earlier, to give people like a benefit? Is that
it's ideas
somehow because of stuff we've already talked about. All right, what about with you? I read you started did you start in 1998 doing stand-up?
So 1998 October was the first time I did stand-up comedy in my life, and by then the only stand-up comedy show I had seen was Delirious with Eddie Murphy, because for some reason that tape went around in townships all over the country.
Great.
But when I was doing my show, it was the first time I was doing stand-up was the first time I was at a stand-up comedy show.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. So that was
your first time even seeing live stand-up.
I'm assuming you saw it on TV.
October. Besides the Eddie Murphy Delirious tape.
In 1998, 4 years after apartheid's end, I read that you were the only, everyone else on the show was white. And there was, is that correct? All the other comedians?
So commercially, I started with a friend of mine, Kagiso Lediga. We went, we studied together. We came up with a comedy sketch show together in varsity. That saw TV like 6 years later. We started stand-up comedy together. But commercially, I became, you know, the kind of the black guy who was doing stand-up. But the lineup and what you're talking about, the Smirnoff International Comedy Festival, which is where I met Russell Peters. And that's how I've been friends with Russell for like 20 years or something.
And Ruben Paul, so, did you meet him through Russell?
And then I met Ruben Paul when he was touring with us. So
that
was 44 comedians, international South Africans, Jimmy Carr and them. That's where I met Jimmy Carr, Russell, Ross Noble. Then I became like the only black comedian in that lineup, right?
Wow.
And then I had free tickets, complimentary tickets to the show. And I was staying in a dorm, in a res. Then I gave the tickets I had for one show to my mates in class. So one night there were 60 black people, students at the show, which was the first time, honestly, besides like ushers and whatever. And then the following night, I had comms for a separate show. And then the same sort of 60 student guys that I had given comms, then I came back. It was
nice.
Like the first time there were like black people out watching comedy.
And this is 4 years. I mean, this is 4 years after.
This is 4 years after Nelson Mandela has been the president.
Yeah.
So there's been obviously a lot of white comedians who've been performing. Mel Miller, Joe Parker. These guys have been going since like 1950-something, 1960-something.
Yeah, they have a history like we do.
They have a history, like, yeah. Like So that went on for like maybe 2 years where I was the black guy. A friend of mine, Kagiso, Tsepo Mogale, Ronnie Mudimola. And then I started doing a show called Comedy Blackout before Black Zombie, which was a lineup of black comics. Brought Pierre the comic, Pierre Edwards, Willie and Woody with the puppet. So I brought out all these guys. That's when I first met Dwayne Perkins. So Dwayne was emceeing one of the comedy blackouts. So this is now in the 2000s.
Okay.
When I started pretty much now, you know, co-producing my own shows with my managers. That went on for about 4 years. And then I started doing Blacks Only in 2004. 2003, 2004, I did Blacks Only because now I wanted to do a show for black people because, you know, my entire career I was performing to white people. I'd be performing to like 4,000 white people and there'd be like two black people in the audience. That was kind of like my career and the makeup of my career for like 2 years. And then started doing Comedy Blackout, and then Blacks Only from 2004, literally 2018, when I last saw Ruben, we're doing a 10,000-seater in Johannesburg at the
Dome. That's what he told me. These are like Black stadiums.
Music festival venue, you know.
10,000 seats.
Yeah, so normally we'd do like 3,000-4,000 people per show, do three shows a year in Joburg, do Cape Town, Devon, maybe two shows. Then I do another festival where I come from in the Free State province, which will do like 5,000 people on a Wednesday night.
Amazing. That's amazing.
And I did that the audience for like 10 years. The audience largely 90%, 96% black, still white people, Indian people, colored people. It's almost like the makeup of the country, right? Which is fair. So the shows would still be largely in English. But some of the guys would choose to do their Venek, their Zulu, their Pedi language, South Sotho here and there. But still largely, you know, white people would buy front row seats to come to a Blacks Only show, you know, because they're always first at the ticket sales.
White people are good at getting tickets.
Good bit. There you go.
There you go.
They thought they just buying tickets. They were not aware.
Good.
They are buying the first row. So,
they didn't know which show.
And then a couple of TV shows, directed like 20 movies for Mnet, Multi Choice, Mzansi Magic, which is like our cable channel, except it's digital terrestrial, DSTV, right? Over time, maybe in the past 7 to 10 years, we've got a movie out on Netflix now called Blitz Patrolli, which is like a Bad Boys, Rush Hour type buddy cop film.
Okay.
It's called Blitz Patrolli. It's actually in the top five buddy cop films to watch on Netflix, including Spencer Confidential, number one.
Yeah.
Hot Fuzz, and then Blaze Patrol at number five.
Nice.
There you go. You
crack the algorithm.
So, yeah. So now you can imagine Netflix wants to have a chat. Maybe we'll do another one.
Netflix.
We're talking about a sequel.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe. We'll see. Amazing. So when you're doing these shows in the 90s and the audience is 100% white, is that because those are the people who knew what comedy
was? That
was
just the makeup of the stand-up comedy industry entertainment in South Africa. The way black stand-up comics commercially.
Why? Like, what's the... Is it because people who can afford the ticket? Or
I have no idea. So you've got people that, if they think stand-up comedy, I'm their reference, right? Or people that, if they became stand-up comics or wanted to be stand-up comics, it's because they saw me being a stand-up comic and they thought, fuck, maybe there's something here. So, but... I mean, I don't know why. You know, it's just how shit was. And
it was just seen as a white thing, the thing that white people did.
Yeah. So, and it's puzzling. I mean, even today, there's still no comedy clubs, by the way, in South Africa. So the one that was premier just tanked liquidation during COVID. Parker's Comedy and Jive. Joe Parker, fantastic guy. 20 years of making room and space for comedians to perform in South Africa. Unfortunately, this COVID shit has lost everything, you know?
Yeah.
The Goliaths, these other kids had a comedy club / restaurant. I think it went on for maybe 2 years or 3 years, I'm not sure. Eventually, they had to fold it. Cape Town Comedy Club, another comic, Stuart Taylor, had to fold it, especially with COVID. Fuck me. Here we go. Welcome to South Africa. This is the fucking country I live in.
Well, yeah, for anyone who's listening, the camera just went black. We can still hear you though. So we will see.
Go black.
The Wi-Fi.
There we go. Or the camera shut down, I guess.
So let me explain to you what just happened.
Yeah, yes. What happened there?
So basically, we just had a power cut in South Africa, which is now rolling power cuts that for about 2 to 4 hours, there's no electricity. Doesn't matter how rich you are. Unless you build a sense of sustainable, independent power system or backup generator, solar power, blah, 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 which is then one of the fuck ups that we're sitting with today in South Africa, basically.
Yeah.
So the generators might kick in at some places, at some office parks, but.
The lights, for anyone listening,
dark.
The lights.
Totally
just,
dark.
The lights just went out.
You're in an office somewhere.
Obviously, your phone still works, so we're talking to you. But
so I'm
it's
using,
not plugged in.
I'm using my my phone data now. I was on Wi-Fi. The backup generator here just sort of came on. But it's, these are now some of the shit that everybody's just like, this is where we've come. So from the Nelson Mandela dream to all the Asgisas and Gear projects and NDP, there's actually not enough power in South Africa. And they've said there won't be for the next 5 years.
Wow. There's not enough power in general? Just...
It's intermittent. Yeah. So you get it, you lose it for 4 hours a day. It's winter now in South Africa, so we're fucked. I had to go buy wood and take it to my house. So my wife and kids can make fire to keep warm.
And then the Wi-Fi is, you're saying, the
everything
Wi-Fi go down?
And, so the towers need electricity, the cell phone towers, even if you've got your own backup system at home, the towers in the street are only going to be alive for so long. And because the power cut goes on for way too long in terms of even their backup is going to fuck up eventually.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, all right. Well, we'll get you out of here. Last thing I want to ask about is it seems moving. I mean, this must have been this like amazing point of pride for you to bring two different cultures together comedically, whether it's, you know, you performing to white people, but then also introducing the black audiences to stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
What was that like in the 90s, late 90s, as you're going through it? And especially, are you stepping into land that used to only be for white people and now you can perform?
Yeah, so
it?
It's all of that. I mean, where we live, black people were never allowed to live in the suburbs, in the fancy places. So all these changes kind of came about. So my wife is half Greek, My wife's dad is Greek. Her mom is Zulu.
Okay.
They moved and lived in Swaziland because in South Africa, they would have been arrested being in a relationship together. Then they moved back after Nelson Mandela became the president, right?
Wow.
So you know, then now you've got all that shit that's still happening. But largely, the majority of Black people are still in the places that they were forced to move in. Their lands were taken, and, you know, they were put in really shitty circumstances and places, which was like another experiment that you put them in a small space, don't kill them, pile them with alcohol and drugs, and they'll kind of explode amongst themselves. So apartheid was also very cleverly executed. Verfoor, the guy who came up with it, studied Hitler and then kind of took out all of his mistakes, which one of them was killing people. Took out the killing part because that's what brought Hitler all the bullshit attention that he didn't need and eventually sort of his demise, right? So Verfoor kind of studied, okay, this is how I'm going to approach this. This is what I'm going to do. So essentially then you had Black people fighting amongst themselves, fighting over space, you know, fighting over minimal resources that are available, which to some extent you still have a little bit of that happening now, especially in business and young Black guys trying to get into business.
Yeah.
Because the economy is still largely owned, 96%, I think, on the stock exchange is still owned by white people.
Wow.
And white people are 7% of the country or something like that?
Nah, there's much more than
that.
Oh,
it is more.
Yes. Okay. I mean,
look, maybe 20% is then a mix of white people, Indian people, mixed. Colored people, maybe even more.
Got it.
Every white South African I've known is, they always make it seem like they had their family had nothing to do with our apartheid. Their apologies come so quickly. Of course, I was against it. But then I knew a lot who would say, in the decades.
There's some nice white people.
They're nice. There, of course, it wasn't them. They just but a lot
of them
I would
are a bit ignorant because they think they had to be there physically, and they don't understand.
Or their grandfather
was
a nice guy. They can't picture him possibly.
The difference they could be making right now, right?
Yeah.
So everybody's grappling with what they have and what do they share, what don't they share, what do they hold on to. Then some are afraid that we trying to take their shit or steal their shit or kill them. So it's all a misconception and just another shit salad that we just need to sit down and talk, you know,
get through it
and understand each other.
That's what I was going to say, because I've heard people say like, oh, it's there's so much crime then.
Yeah,
and I was like, well, what did you expect would happen? Like you can't just like, it's not going to be smooth if you treat people this way for so long. And then,
yeah, man, it's taken us back quite a bit.
Yeah.
So you could say people thought it would be an easy fix, I guess. ANC thought it would be an easy fix. But now everybody's kind of like going, actually, fuck, it's not easy. But then this is now 27 years later when everyone is like, well, you've had all this time. You've caused this other damage and bullshit and corruption. And it's really a mixed bag. It's a mixed feelings as well a lot, because we are like, okay, we're not going to vote for the ANC. Then who are you going to vote for? So it's just going to have people staying away during the elections. And just not voting anyone else, because they don't trust anyone else. They don't trust the DA, who's seen as largely, fuck it, they could fucking ring a bell and set the alarm and just bring back apartheid, you know?
Yeah.
If you now give them back that political power and the office and the government institutions. So there's also that paranoia versus actually this white guy is fucking good at what he does. Let's just let him run the fucking thing. So it's we're having our own COVID within COVID, you know, within a pandemic.
It seems like you need a new generation, like a post, like the ANC. They came from the apartheid generation. They fought, but you seem like they need like a younger EFF. Turner's an EFF man.
So a lot of white people believe the EFF is literally going to eat them and take their land and rape them. And shoot them and kill them and take their money.
I guess.
Right? A lot of white people believe that. A lot of influential white people believe that.
Right.
So that's more extreme. It's seen as a more extreme party, maybe?
So they keep trying to fix who they think is the better ANC in their minds. Right. And then they also have the option of, you know what, our white guys are doing well. They're running this thing very well. So will support them, but then they're also trying not to look like they're just doing it. Mm-hmm. They're white guys, you know.
Sure. Yeah, that's not good.
Those white guys. Yeah.
So what about for you? What's the is there touring? Does you see touring coming up soon? Or are you still waiting out all the COVID stuff?
Man, I did a show for 90 people last Thursday. I'm doing it again this Thursday, but that's the most people we can have in a venue.
Yeah.
And the levels just actually went backwards, where we could have 200 people. So technically, I haven't worked in like 14 to 16 months. Yeah. I haven't done stand-up comedy. Did some stuff online, you know, some endorsements based on my social media following.
How did that feel, the show a couple of weeks ago? Because I just got back on stage three or 4 weeks ago.
Look, it felt great because, you know, when you're in stand-up, for me, having done like 4,000, 10,000 people, mm-hmm. You know, I've toured with Russell Peters where you do like 6,000 people in a show and you do like four shows, you know. So for me, the number thing, it's like, yeah, sure, you make the money, but I think most comedians will agree you always have more fun with a smaller audience, right?
Sure. Yeah.
It's more intimate. I generally play small audiences,
et cetera. So, but it, you know, I can't definitely, I'm not doing it for the money. It's never going to happen. So for me, it's going to be maybe another year or a few months, if not more.
But isn't it weird
for South Africa to get back to those numbers?
I found that just getting on stage, I've been writing for the past year, so my writing is fine. But there was definitely, I would finish the set and be like, man, there's some mechanics that I need. I took 14 months off, right?
Yes.
And I started again 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I'm like, this is going to take, it's going to take a month or two to get back into it, of performing a lot.
So, yeah. So for me, in this past 16 months, this was maybe the fourth or fifth time I was on stage.
Yeah. That was about me.
And, so literally, you know, I'm currently at an office block, like I said, where I'm working with some guys. We're looking at startups. We're looking at how do we make internet access affordable and accessible to Black people, people in the rural areas, make it cheaper. I'm trying to help raise money for a few startups as well, just based on my influence and people I know around the world and South Africa. You know, one or two things might happen with Netflix. But for me, I've ran a film and production company. I've had a modeling agency. So I've always looked for things that can be businesses outside of me having to show up or outside of me being a stand-up comic. So I'm just doing more of that. And then now and then I'll be like, I've got this Zoom thing. Now I must be a comedian and talk to comics. When I haven't been in a comedy club in like 14 months, 6 months.
Totally.
You know, during the pandemic, I did a thing on YouTube every night, 6 days a week for like 2 months. And then one day I was like, fuck it, hey, this 100 views, I'm not even making money. I don't see my kids. I don't see my wife.
Yeah.
You know, then I stop. And then I'll just go back to doing whatever else that I think at that time is kind of, you know, inspiring me. And it's kind of obvious. So if you look at the power cut that we're literally in the middle of, I met today with a guy who's into LNG, which is liquid nitrogen gas. So he's trying to then get that into modes of transport to replace diesel, to replace coal, if you talk of energy. So I'm going to sit with him and then I'll say, okay, Sharp, how do we package your business or you and how do we sell your business? So I'm doing a lot of advisory as well, just based on taking some startups and letting people know, actually, this thing exists. This is what they're about, which I've done with comedians in the past, you know, with actors, with DJs that I used to manage. So a lot of strategizing, what's the next best thing in the world? How do we get from here to there? You know, what's always going to work. And obviously, Africa, for me, I think that's where the money is, you know, the continent beyond South Africa, way beyond South Africa. So I'd rather even start touring in Africa than do more 4,000 and 10,000 people in South Africa. You know, I'd do that because the people are there and people love me and I wouldn't be where I am without them. But I'm more curious in doing 100 people, 200 people in Uganda, in Kenya, in Ghana, in Nigeria, in Rwanda. So the, as the country and the continent opens up, you know, my next, I'm getting on a, maybe not a boat, but I'm getting on a plane to into Africa. Maybe not a boat. I think the boat's
a bad idea.
Well. I'm looking at the geography.
Boat,
you're not going to
end well.
Yeah, the boat. No, that's not the best plan. The plane, or the car. Anything but the boat. So, and then you're getting internet to the rest of the country. I mean, these are way more important things than stand up.
I'm trying. So, you know, whatever gets people communicating and talking and then consuming whatever the shit we try to do, you and I are following sure. online and- on their phones. So that's one part of it. The whole lot of infrastructure that's fucked, you know, rail infrastructure is not working, water is not working properly, electricity is not working properly. But for me, you know, whatever bit of money I will make, I'm gonna take it and go fucking make some stupid movie that might not give me my money back. Or go and do more shows and bring Ruben and do more shows, and then I make a loss. And then, but as long as I've got something else that's going to take care of my wife and kids and my family and friends, then I'm fine, you know?
That's it. Then, well, thank you.
The people need power for podcasts. Yeah. More Wi-Fi, so they have more podcast listeners.
David Kau, everybody. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing it at least a little closer fine. This time.
David Kau is fine. Don't worry about
David
it.
Thank Kau. You, David.
Thank you so much for doing the show, man. Pleasure, everybody, check him out. Online.
Shout out
Check
to out Ruben, shout out to Russell Peters, shout out to Dwayne, you know, all my peeps out there. Pleasure meeting you guys and chatting to you. Maybe we'll see each other in New York, or you guys will come to Africa.
We would love, I have to come to South Africa to, if I get back.
I think that ship has sailed for you. I think we should forget about that woman.
Yeah.
Are you coming to New York? Let's hang out in New York, man. Come either to way, New York. We'll be in South Africa. David Kau, that's it. Kaplan, what should we do?
We should shout out. I guess, what do? We get lost.
Get lost.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.